coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. And now, here's Jim.
Richard Sauder, Ph.D., is an extraordinary researcher. He is a man who does not take things lightly. He is eminently thorough, and this book is a knockout. And it is, again, it's the kind of a book that leaves you at the doorstep of thinking. In other words, what it does, it sort of leads you to a conclusion without making it. And it leads you in such an important way. And it does so by building all the roadbed that you'll ever need to walk to that conclusion on, with data, with facts, with interviews, with citations, with references, and so forth. It's all here. And, wow.
If I may say so, sure. Jeff, what it'll do is lead you to think large thoughts and ponder large issues that would not otherwise have occurred to you.
And as you've said in the first hour, we just don't see this talked about. We don't see pictures. We don't hear. But here is something Mike Nelson just sent. And thank you, Mike. This is a story from Stars and Stripes, the European version of the military publication, Stars and Stripes, from the date on it is August 6, 1998. This is actually a Scripps Howard News Service piece. And it starts out, this won't surprise you, but it's interesting to see. This, again, was 1998. The underground installations, ultra-secure manufacturing plants, and once-secret laboratories America needed to wage the so-called Cold War are still intact, despite federal downsizing policies that have gutted many other military and civilian programs. Not these, folks. These are still up and running. This is during the Clinton administration. During its first 5 years, the Clinton administration increased the staff at the massive Cheyenne Mountain Air Force and Army complex in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. That famous, of course, underground vault where thousands of military strategists and technicians were and still are prepared to fight World War III. It underwent a $1.7, Richard, billion-dollar renovation.
Yeah.
$1.7 renovation.
Yeah, my guess is they made it a little deeper and bigger.
So it could survive a little better.
I think so. My guess is that that NORAD facility is no longer the real main cutting-edge bunker it used to be. It's still very active. It's still in great use. I think they have others that are deeper, bigger, better, more secret. Because the technology, remember that NORAD facility was built back in the mid-1960s and was actually conceived and designed in the mid to late 50s. So it's really
right.
A kind of a first-generation facility.
Almost a dinosaur.
Almost a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And with the megatonnage and the warheads available in the world's arsenals now, I guarantee the Chinese have a big one aimed directly at Cheyenne Mountain. The Russians have at least one, if not 10 or 20, and so on. It would be, if you're in the Cheyenne Mountain facility, in the event of a real shooting nuclear war, I would think you would fairly well be tomato paste within 20 or 25 minutes.
Agreed. Now, the issue of Russian underground facilities is another one that, wouldn't it be fun to be able to do a book on that? But there is supposedly ringing Moscow.
Yeah.
I have been told, maybe you heard the same thing,
yes.
17 deep underground, enormous facilities all around Moscow. Big. We're not talking about little hole-in-the-wall civil defense things.
No, very large. Very large and deep. The Russians, for sure, have large, very deeply buried facilities, no question about it. Many countries have built these facilities. The Scandinavians have some of the largest and most sophisticated underground facilities. I've read that the Swiss Alps, for example, are tunneled like Swiss cheese.
I would imagine the Swiss are way ahead of the game.
Yeah, and the English, of course, there are some very well-known underground facilities in the United Kingdom.
It is said about the UK that there is a large part of the south of England on the west side that is literally honeycombed with natural underground caverns and tunnels, and they have made very good use of these.
Yeah, I think so. I've heard stories and rumors about a lot of tunneling in the UK, and I think the English have been at this for just about as long as the Americans. And then, of course, there are underground facilities. And what a lot of people don't know is that during the 1980s, in the run-up to the war, so-called Gulf War, which was planned well in advance, by the way, that Bechtel, with connivance of the Reagan administration, the Reagan-Bush administration in the period 1980 to 1988, built a series of very deep and very elaborate underground facilities for the Saudis, which were used, by the way, by Schwarzkopf and company to wage the Gulf War just about as soon as they were finished. And of course, the Chinese have these, and on and on. The United States is certainly not the only area where you will find deep and large underground facilities. However, it's very hard for me to research what is happening elsewhere around the world. I live here in North America, and so I research what I can feasibly discover.
There is another note from Mike Nelson that is interesting about the Seabed Weapons Control Treaty, which prohibits the placement of nuclear weapons, nuclear launching devices, storage, or testing facilities on the ocean floor outside of the 12 nautical mile coastal zone measured from the baseline of the territorial sea, as stated in the Convention of the Territorial Sea and the Contiguous Zone of 1958. So it goes way back. So there is some treaty which would ostensibly prevent underwater bases with nuclear capability. But what are treaties made for? Wallpaper or
something like that.
Yeah,
my guess is, although I don't cite this treaty in the book, I have run across references to it before. My guess is that treaty and other similar treaties are flouted with regularity.
Usually, when they sign a treaty, it means we're going ahead to do this, doesn't it?
I don't know, but there are all kinds of treaties. And my guess is that this treaty is not adhered to any more scrupulously than many of the others.
All right. Take us underwater.
Well, you know, when I first began this research, virtually from the beginning, back in 1993 and 1994, I had people telling me, just ordinary people, mind you, Richard, the United States Navy is the major actor underground. They're the ones doing the serious tunneling and the serious secret underground base construction.
They're also the ones who map the moon. Now figure that out.
Yeah. They do a lot of things that are really don't have to do per se with sailing battleships. But when I heard these people saying these things to me, I was thinking to myself, yeah, right. The Navy, underground, and tunnels. Sure. And that was my attitude at the beginning. I thought people simply were out of their minds, frankly, that they didn't know what they were talking about. And I was rather dismissive. But, you know, the years went by, and I kept hearing more and more stories. And so I began to attach more credence to them. And then I actually started to acquire some documentation. And at a certain point, I passed a threshold in my research and in my thinking where I began to say, you know, Richard, I've heard one too many people, persons tell me this. I've seen one too many pieces of documentation now. indeed it appears possible and perhaps even probable that the United States Navy is involved in these clandestine tunneling activities. But then what caused me to move my mind into a totally different realm altogether was when I ran across this watershed document, pardon the pun, entitled Manned Undersea Structures, the Rock Site Concept, and which came out of the China Lake Naval Ordnance Test Station in 1966. And, Jeff, that just blew open the floodgates in my mind. And when I saw that the author was talking about tunneling offshore with a tunnel boring machine and heading out under the open sea and roaming for hundreds of miles and making a network of tunnels, hundreds of miles, extending hundreds of miles offshore down to a depth of thousands of feet below the bed of the ocean, beneath the seafloor, and making highly elaborate, very large, deeply buried, submarine, permanently manned installations. That moved my thinking into a realm, totally different realm. It expanded my the scope of my research. It caused me to spread out some pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that I previously wasn't able to relate to other areas of my research to flesh out a picture that hadn't occurred to me before. 75% of the surface of this planet is covered in water. I hadn't been thinking about that. I live on land, and so I had been thinking about deeply buried facilities beneath dry land. But there's an awful lot of territory that lies beneath water, Jeff, and it is accessible.
Totally.
To tunnel boring machines.
You bet. All right, we'll be right back with Dr. Richard Sauter, Ph.D., and continue our discussion underwater and underground bases. If you'd like to call in, we'll maybe take a call or two, 800-876-4123. And the phone number to order Richard's book, toll-free, 800-718-4514. That's 718-4514.
Welcome back to the most intriguing nighttime talk on radio with Jeff Rentz.
Intriguing. Good word, and we try to live up to that every night here. Richard Sauter is with us, Underwater and Underground Bases, his new book. Just amazing to think about what's out there. And he gives you the data, the research, the material, the quotes with which to formulate your own potentials. And as he said, you start thinking real big, real fast.
Let me give you a direct quote from this Navy document we were discussing just before that break, Jeff. With modern-day shaft and tunnel boring techniques, and mind you, that was written in 1966, access to the seafloor from land can be carried out at depths beneath the sea of several thousand feet, at least 10,000 to 12,000 feet, that's 2 miles down, and to distances offshore of tens to hundreds of miles. This is from a Navy document, United States Navy document.
Wow.
So all the way back 35 years ago, the United States Navy was coming up with these ideas to make these far-ranging tunnels, hundreds of feet or hundreds of miles offshore, and thousands of feet beneath sea level. So it was feasible then. How much more so now? I am inclined to believe, based on my research and what I've been told, that it is possible that activity of this type has been carried out.
Mike in Washington has given us a ring, would like to say something. Come on the program, Mike. It's your turn. Hello, Mike. Hello, Mike. Is Mike there, Jim?
Hello? Hello?
Go ahead, Mike. It's your turn. Speak right in.
Okay. Hey, I listen to your show every night, Jeff. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Thanks very much.
You bet. I've got a question that's been on my mind a long time, even before your show here and stuff, is several years. Okay. Do you think that it's possible that the Chinese could tunnel across the Pacific to the mainland of the United States?
Sure. Yes, and vice versa.
Yeah, and I was going to ask the same.
I think it is possible. It would be a long, hard project, but could it be done? I think it probably could be done. Are they doing it? I don't know. I hope not. I think that if the Chinese were to deliver a blitzkrieg attack on the United States, it would probably could come via intercontinental ballistic missiles. There would really be no defense against that. They would simply fire off 10 or 20 ballistic missiles, and 20, 25 minutes later, Los Angeles, Seattle would be gone, Salt Lake City, Phoenix would be gone, Houston would be gone, Chicago would be gone, etc. In theory, could the Chinese or the Japanese or the Americans tunnel all the way across an ocean such as the Pacific Ocean? Yes, I think so. But in terms of a sneak attack, I think such a tunnel would have limited utility.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But it might be used for more clandestine operations than just, you know, an all-out blitzkrieg was what I was thinking.
Yes, I think if you had these undersea facilities, and based on my research, I'm inclined to think that some of them may have been made, you could do almost anything in them, and highly secretly, by the way, because they would be so secure. Only parties with sophisticated submarine technology would be able to gain access. And even then, it wouldn't be easy. You would have to know exactly where the facilities were. And if you're beneath thousands of feet of water, hundreds of miles out to sea, there aren't too many people who will come knocking at your door unexpectedly.
Yeah, I read you. Hey, this is a really interesting topic. I just can't. I'm just.
Wait, you're enjoying yourself.
Really enjoying myself.
Sit back and enjoy more. Thank you, Mike, for calling.
I have to say, Mike, if the show is interesting you, that you would certainly be in hog heaven in the book, because we're not even scratching the surface.
No, we're not even getting near it. We're near it, but we're not into it. So by all means, thanks, Mike, very much for the call. And the phone number again is 1-800-718-4514. Probably the most odds-on favorite for hottest book of the year, Underwater and Underground Bases, Richard Sauter, Ph.D. Be right back.
Jeff Renz will be right back following these messages on the Talk Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
Okay, we're back with Richard Sauter, Ph.D., Underwater and Underground Bases, a brand new book, and the cover is great. You always have great covers on your books.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome. All right, let's go back to the telephones and say hello to Vaughn, standing by in Pennsylvania, Vaughn?
Yes, I am.
Welcome
How are you
to
doing,
the program.
Jeff?
I'm fine, thank you. How's yourself tonight?
Oh, just great. I've only been listening to your show for about the past 2 weeks, and it's absolutely the best. A friend of mine turned me on to it.
Thank you, sir. Thanks very much. We try hard as we can here, and I'm glad you like it.
You're doing a great job. But I have two questions for your guest here, and they both have to deal with the conspiracy theory, as it were.
Okay.
The first one is these machines. I mean, to me, when I look at it, it seems like this would be like the pride of Western technology, and I don't see how this has remained such a big secret. I did see the drilling of the channel on, it was a Discovery Channel program, and it was, the machine was absolutely huge. And it just seems odd that these.
No, there's no conspiracy. There's no conspiracy about the technology itself, in that this machinery has been around for many years. And it is a widely used technology. Jeff and I were earlier just reflecting on the fact that these machines are not often publicly seen. They're in use underground, frequently hundreds or even in some cases thousands of feet beneath the surface. And for that reason, if for no other, images of them simply do not often appear on television or in newspapers and magazines.
Okay. You mentioned something earlier when you and Jeff were talking about NASA.
Yes.
Possibly hiding information about Mars. And
oh, you can bank on it. There's no possible. Let me retire that for you. And I say this after 8 years in this business. Bank on it. There is information being kept hidden from you, I, and the American public and the world.
But I don't see what NASA would gain from that. It seems like it would be something that would cause people to become more interested in exploration of space.
All right. Well, that's a very interesting question. I guess, Richard, if he's listened to the program for a year, he wouldn't ask it. But then that he has, and it's a good question, what can we do to help him out?
There's a culture of secrecy at NASA. I was discussing this recently with Don Ecker, who's the research director for UFO Magazine in Los Angeles. And he mentioned to me that one of the things you find out about NASA is certain facets of NASA's programs and research have been militarized. And there's a great deal of secret activity. And for whatever reason, indeed, NASA is concealing information and data from the American public. I've seen enough. I've heard enough. I don't have any question about it. I can tell you that when I first started my research, I approached NASA for information on any underground facilities they may have. And the reply I got from the NASA public relations officer thanked me very warmly for inquiring about the size of the NASA budget for that fiscal year, which was not my question at all. I had made no inquiry at all in that regard. So they flat out, she flat out lied in response to my point blank question. So that in itself educated me as to how devious these people at NASA are. They can't even answer a simple question in a straightforward manner.
Richard, may I say one thing? That this is not to impugn the hardworking men and women who do the real nuts and bolts work. There are some fabulously talented, devoted, dedicated, patriotic Americans there who are being used and abused by a leadership which is in bed with the intelligence community.
Yeah, these policy decisions happen above their heads. And they, as you rightly observe, the rank and file down below in the bureaucracy aren't the ones who make these decisions to withhold information or to take certain aspects of missions black. Getting back to Mars, for example, I've seen enough in the pictures I've looked at that I have no question that the American space agencies,
and of course,
I qualified the JPL and Malin Space Science Systems as space agencies, since NASA uses them. They are not public agencies, so NASA can contract missions out to them, and then guess what? You cannot file a Freedom of Information Act request and get information from them because they are not government agencies. That whole process is too neat for words.
That's amazing. It really is.
Well, and Michael Malin holds back the photographs that are coming in from the Mars Orbiter camera for months, in some cases a year, even up to 2 years, I believe.
Now, Mike, just ask yourself that. Why would our tax dollars put a mission on Mars or above Mars, and why would our space agency, our public space agency, give an individual, an alleged private contractor, Michael Malin, the right to hold back photographs of that planet out there for up to a year before we're allowed to see them? Why would they do that?
Well, I'll answer that. They give him veto power, and because he is not a public official, then he is not publicly accountable to the ordinary system of checks and balances.
Very, very clever. Yep. Anyway, there's a reason that the live transmissions from the space shuttle missions, Mike, are no longer coming down unhindered. They're right there. It's all being delayed. It's all being carefully watched. It's being carefully screened. And just keep at it.
Well, if you want to browse my website at SouterZone.com, you see I put up some photographs. And if you look at some of the spots and so forth, you'll see evidence of things that may well be extraterrestrial life forms. You may see a real-life Martian there. It may not look...
Don't hold your breath, Vaughn.
I'm not talking about something that looks like what you might have expected to see, but some exotic life forms. I and other people are increasingly inclined to believe that what's popping up in some of these photos are possible life forms, which are very strange seeming to our eyes, because guess what? They're not terrestrial life forms, and life on other planets is liable to be quite different than it is here on Earth. And my guess is that that is just one of the things that these space agencies are holding back and withholding, because they don't want us to think large thoughts. They want us to think very small thoughts, because small-minded people can be controlled very easily.
They want tomorrow to be just like yesterday. Have you been to my website, Vaughn? Okay. All right, we'll come back and kind of steer Vaughn to some of Richard's Mars photos, Tom Van Flanderen's Mars photos, his presentation of the National Press Club on April 5th of this very year, just this month, a couple weeks ago, and get him oriented here. Be right back with Richard Sauter in just a couple minutes. 1-800-876-4123 is our number here. If you'd like to call in, you're more than welcome. See you shortly. Okay, back with Richard Sauter. Vaughn, are you still there? Hello. Vaughn, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what I wanted to suggest is to go to my website. Are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, do go to the website. Look up Tom Van Flanderen, F-L-A-N-D-E-R-N, Tom Van Flanderen's National Press Club presentation of April 5th. There's a link on my website, and he had about, what was it, Richard, 50 different pictures of Mars,
something like that.
That show utterly mind staggering anomalies, to put it mildly. In many cases, go look at some of those and ask yourself, why have many of those pictures been withheld from us for 6 months, for a year, for longer,
and so on? Yeah, I remember about maybe it was around 2 years ago. I was at a friend's house and we were looking at pictures that NASA had online of photographs from Mars. And when you looked at this one, it looked almost exactly like a staircase. I mean, it was so...
There are so many things up there, Vaughn, and go look at Tom Van Flanderen's presentation.
Well, Jeff, actually, you had a link up on your site right now. I think you put it up this evening.
Just a couple days ago, I think. Another one tonight. You're quite right.
One tonight, Vaughn. I would recommend looking at it. It has a very anomalous-looking structure there that certainly raises questions as to, I don't know what we're looking at, some kind of tubing or aqueduct.
It's
hard to say, but it looks very artificial.
The more you look, the more you're amazed, and it's just so much to do. Vaughn, thank you very much for calling in. Thanks for being out there listening. It's all for you, so make of it what you will. Okay, take care. And let's head over to Portland, Oregon real quick and say hello to our old buddy Sidhar. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
I've been listening to your show tonight. You're talking about the underground bases, both underground and undersea.
We're supposed to have something in the Pacific Northwest in Oregon, too, Sidhar. Have you come across anything about that?
I've heard rumors of it. I don't have anything for sure.
Okay.
My question is, I've also been interested in the HARP technology. If a country possessed HARP technology, whether it be us or the Russians, wouldn't that negate any underground or undersea bases as HARP, as one of its abilities is to be tomographic as far as looking into the ground?
Yeah, I've also read references to the tomography aspect of HARP, which essentially, as you say, allows the Earth's surface to be penetrated such that you can electronically
image
what's down there.
Isn't it supposed to be down to a depth of a kilometer or something? It's deep.
Oh, I think it'll go deeper than that. But, yes, it would, in theory, perhaps in practice, permit you to see these facilities. And my guess is that may well be one of the uses to which HARP is being put, that the United States military would probably want to, so to speak, take a tomographic slice of the Earth's crust and see if they could detect any clandestine tunnels or subterranean or submarine facilities that have been built. So the answer to your question is yes. I think that is possibly one of the things that HARP is doing.
Would the current Trident class of submarines have the electronic capability to be able to find and monitor underwater bases?
I don't know. Perhaps. I just don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
But electronic technology today is so sophisticated that I wouldn't rule out the possibility.
Well, the point you were making is that a lot of it is out of sight, out of mind. Are they more interested, I guess, in just keeping it out away from the public?
Yes.
Whereas the military on both sides would basically know what's happening, but the public on both sides
exactly.
Is kept in the dark.
You raise a very good point, and this is something I get around to in the last chapter of my book, as to whether the secrecy surrounding these projects indicates that they are being done for us or to us. And in fact, the intelligence agencies of major countries, the Russians, the Chinese, the French, the Americans, the English, the Germans, etc., have a very good idea of what other major nations are doing. And in fact, they have a much better idea of what other nations are doing than the citizens themselves of those nations know is happening. So you raise a point that is absolutely valid. The secrecy is intended to keep us in the dark. The Mossad, the People's Liberation Army, the ministries of intelligence in England and so forth know a great deal about these activities that you and I do not. We have to, an ordinary individual such as myself, must spend years of time and effort to acquire just a superficial knowledge of what is happening.
And that's what's between the covers of this book, Sidhar. Three years of data research.
Oh yes, well, and there's quite. I don't want to minimize what I've done here. You won't find this information anywhere else. But all I'm saying is that it was very hard for me to get this information. This is a very difficult subject to research, but are there people in the intelligence agencies who know a great deal about this in Russia, in China,
guess,
and England?
My guess would be yes.
Yes, there are. Absolutely, and they know more about it than almost any person in this country outside of the agencies that are involved in these activities. So, in fact, much of the secrecy is intended to keep us from finding out what is happening.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Appreciate all your research you're doing, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Next up to the phones, we've got about 3 minutes left, is Tom. Hello, Tom. Welcome aboard.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Jeff.
Hi.
This is Tom in Miami, who's been trying to get a Jeff Wren station here, unfortunately unsuccessful so far.
Well, those big corporations want to keep us out, so keep after them. Thanks very much for your help, Tom.
My question is that even though I don't trust the government as far as I can throw them, how would they keep all the men that would be required to build these underground tunnels quiet?
Well, you know, I broached this question in my book. For one thing, the number of people required is not as large as you might think. I cite one document that I received through the Freedom of Information Act, and it took me almost 2 years to get this thing, by the way. So it wasn't easy to get. It would take just several thousand people. And by the way, remember, they wouldn't all have to be men. Now, how do you get them to be, induce them to secrecy or keep them quiet? Simple. You swear them to secrecy.
Right. Well,
and if you have a security oath, you cannot lightly violate it. The penalties for an infraction are very severe, and the average person is simply not going to violate their oath. And for those who do, the penalties, I'm sure, are swift and severe if it is truly a very secret project.
Well, with large numbers of people, I don't know that would work.
Well, it did with the Manhattan Project for many years, for example.
Except that these are laborers. These are not scientists.
Some of the Manhattan Project people. My grandmother worked for it, and she was a laborer as such. And I think Richard's point is well taken, and we do have to remember...
Yes, common laborers are sworn to secrecy. And in fact, on these highly secret projects, you're not really a common laborer like a guy sitting around a day labor storefront in a mid-city somewhere. We're talking about highly skilled, highly trained technicians and construction operators who would really make a career out of this, and who would be paid very well and would receive some very nice compensation in return for secrecy. And I think as well that I do believe that the penalties are swift and severe for those who violate their oaths on these types of projects.
Indeed. Tom, we've got to run. Thanks very much for the call.
Okay,
almost out of time. There are so many areas to go with this book. Believe me, it is it's a bonanza.
And if you read it, Jeff, read it, you will see that there's a great deal that we didn't even touch.
What I do with a book when I don't have a lot of time, I'll open it up, say, five or six pages different, just to open it at random and start reading. Every one was a hit.
Well, this is a very dense book. As you say, it was 3 years in the writing, and there's plenty of footnotes here for those who want to track down the original documentation. Have at it. But I warn you, in some cases, some of these documents required a great deal of time to obtain. They weren't easy to get. But here they are. You don't have to get them. I did. You have but to read the book. And I assure you, by the time you finish it, you will have questions in your mind that weren't there when you started.
Yeah. Next time you look down at the ground, you'll think differently. Thanks, Richard.
Sure.
Great
Thank
to visit
you,
with you, and we'll talk soon. Richard Sauter, Ph.D., and once again, the 800 number for the book, 800-718-4514, 718-4514.